Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Hideaway Podcast, Episode 9.
Nuff. I just recently binged watched the 4 episodes of The Bachelorette.
I can't believe you're watching that. Is it good?
Honestly, it is. I haven't watched it since like season, I don't know, 2. It is so good. And there's this guy on the show this year called, his name is Chad. And it really feels like the Chad show and not JoJo show. But spoiler, she sent him home.
No!
I know. But the other thing we watched recently was the Bo Burnham
Netflix special.
What was it called? Make Happy?
Make Happy.
It was really good.
Yeah, Bo Burnham is one of my favorite comedians. He does a really strange theatrical style. He got a start on YouTube 10 years ago. He would like post videos of him in his bedroom playing keyboard and singing comedy songs. And then about 2 years ago, he put out a free special on YouTube called What? Or
What?
What?
What did you say?
What?
What?
Just the word what.
W-H-A-T. What?
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 And it was really, 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 really good and funny. And it's super theatrical. He does sort of a combination of stand-up comedy and musical numbers and strange kind of performance arty kinds of things. But his new show, Make Happy, just got put on Netflix last week. It's really good. Like, you should really go check it out.
Yeah. What was interesting with Make Happy was the relationship he takes with the audience.
It's almost like he wishes his audience was smarter and actually listening to him more than they are in the special. They're laughing at things you can tell. He's like, that's not really what I...
Yeah, he's like, why would you laugh at that? Like, I can do anything and you're going to laugh. Whereas, like, a lot of what he says is actually very sad and...
Dark.
And dark. And like, he wants to be performed, but he also doesn't want the pressure or, like, the need to please an audience that it comes with. So it's an interesting comedy show because it's not necessarily just about making you laugh.
But it is totally hilarious.
But it is really funny, and it's so smart.
It's so smart. And I think sort of he leaves you with this statement of, if you can live your life without an audience, you should do it. And what he means by that is that now with Instagram and Facebook and all these different social media elements, you're so constantly posting a version of yourself to your audience, even if your audience is friends. And having that relationship with an audience all the time is new and strange. Mm-hmm. And he talks about it in a really insightful way.
Mm-hmm. Well, on today's podcast, it's the Tony edition. It's the Tony Awards.
It's the Tony Awards.
I mean, I'm like a big theater geek, so I'm like super excited for the Tony Awards. We had our friends Chris Lewick and Amanda Pico on our podcast for this episode.
They are both absolute marketing guru geniuses.
Amanda had a career in marketing, but then 7 years ago started her own firm called the Pico Group. And then Chris was always sort of tangentially, is that how you say that word?
Yeah, tangentially.
Involved, but then he officially came on a few years ago.
Most of you in the circus community will know Chris Lewick probably from the Downtown Clown Review that he ran for about 6 years. He was first a clown and transitioned his way into being a creative director at an ad agency.
Amanda and Chris are married, and they met at Brooklyn College where they both went to study acting. And it's interesting because both of them transitioned into these entrepreneurs starting different companies and working still in theater and circus, but more on the business side.
Yeah, I think anybody who has questions or thoughts about how do you market your circus show, what can I do to promote myself, this will be a really valuable conversation, I hope.
Yeah, and they're really funny.
So if you're enjoying the show, we have 2 asks for you. If you find value in the Hideaway podcast, if you're enjoying it, if you find it insightful, we'd really appreciate it if you would share it with your friends on Facebook or on Twitter or over email. For those of you who've already done that, thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. Our second ask is, if you are enjoying the show and you have any guest suggestions or questions you want us to ask of any particular guests or of all of our guests, please send those to hello@hideawaycircus.com. Lindsay and I really do read those. We've gotten a whole bunch of great guest suggestions and one really great question. Please keep sending them.
Only one good question.
We only got one question, but a bunch of people have suggested people for us to talk to who are now on our list. So maybe you'll hear them soon. All right. Enjoy our episode with Chris and Amanda.
Welcome to Broadway.
But seriously, let's talk about the Tonys for a minute because it's Sundance.
So excited.
So I do think Eclipse is going to win Best Play. I think Hamilton is going to win. Although, I will say, Josh and I listened to two podcasts about Shuffle Along.
It's so good.
One with George C. Wolfe and then one with Scott Rudin. And I, listening to it and how they, like, conceived it and made it from just, I was like, I think Hamilton will win, but Shuffle Along deserves it.
We saw a panel on, at the Spring Road Conference with Shuffle Along, and it was like the most amazing experience. You know, I mean, like, just listening to him, you know, talk about the process.
George C. Wolfe.
Yeah.
He's on, like, the board of New Dramatists, and so am I, and I'm like, I was like, I want him to go to the board meeting so bad yesterday, but he wasn't there. He's way too cool for that.
He might just be, like, slightly busy.
He might. At the moment. I know, right? It's like, Tony Awards, a new meeting. Show. I'll come to the next one, but I, like, now I have, like, the biggest crush on his, like, mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's incredible.
And then the choreographer, what's his name?
Savion Glover.
Yeah, Glover. He's you know, that's, like, pretty cool, too.
Yeah.
And they talked a lot about how, you know, he's never, you know, done that. Like, he's never conceived of dance for other people, you know, really. Is that true? I'm not making that up, right? They did talk about that.
I think they did.
Yeah.
Well, like, he was in, like, Jill's Last Jam. And it was just such a fascinating,
But George C. Wolfe on the podcast was talking about hiring him when he was 17. Glover.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Pretty neat.
It's
such an amazing show. And, like, cool. The talent and, like, the costumes and the tapping, and they go through, like, keeping the tapping really, really, really tight and small, and then breaking it out and then bringing it back really, really tight. And also just what they've done with that show has, like, you walk into the theater and you're in it. Like, the whole experience just grabs you and pulls you in. Like, you walk in the lobby, there's designed pieces with, like, historical information.
It's like 1922 or 20, whatever.
Yeah. And then you sit in your seat and, like, just even, like, what the curtain is changes from pre-show to intermission to post-show, and there's an insert in your playbill with actual history and photos of that time and the people. And when you're first sitting there before the show starts, there's just the clicking and clacking of tap shoes the whole time before the show starts. So you come in and you're just, like, you're ready. Like, you hear the click, 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 click of the shoes backstage, which is just so amazing.
Into the Tony campaigns you guys, like, have going on? This week and last week must be crazy.
So much.
Yeah. You start to have it's mostly for, there's two different types, right? There's the one that's for the show that's actually nominated. But then there's also the ones for the shows that, you know, have, you know, like Avenue Q and things like that have been around for a long time. It's like, well, what are you doing right now to stay relevant and stay interesting and things like that? So those are the two different types of
For the ones campaigns. That are new shows, what do you do if they're nominated?
Yeah.
So there's...
We start asking, we say, it's like, it's almost like exactly what Amanda was talking about, where you're like, what are the really unique and special elements of this show?
Right.
And then what content, I mean, especially content and advertising, can you create to deliver that message to the people that, you know, will be voting, obviously, but also just, you know, to the greater conversation of what's happening. So you really do have this moment where, you know, press and social media and marketing and advertising should all be having the conversation about how special and important and unique this show is. And
support every area supporting each other. So with advertising, it'll be, you know, larger format print ads in, let's say, the New York Times, for example, full pages, instead of doing you know, just a strip ad on the cover of the Arts and Leisure section, a full page ad or a double truck ad, or what Shuffle Along did, which was really unprecedented, a triple truck, to have to really get all of the, to get the pull quotes out there and make it really amazing for people to see and go, oh, wow, this is incredible. This is something I really need to see, or there's another layer of it that I haven't thought of. And during the voting process, we also do Tony voter emailings and mailings. So the hard mailings are usually like booklets and adjacent information about the production, about the people, things that are really special about the show that we want the voters to know about that they might not already know.
And in addition to that, all of, you know, the industry is sort of sculpted in a way so that it's like once the Tony nominations happen, like the industry knows that all the Tony voters are going to be like coming and seeing all these shows. So there's so many dinners and, you know, board events and, you know, conferences and luncheons that happen between that moment and Sunday that, you know, and so it's a big part of, you know, bringing, like for Eclipsed, it was like all the girls are at this luncheon. And
yeah, and they looked amazing.
Yeah, you know,
at the new dramatist luncheon, they were sitting right behind us, and they were like, you know, they introduce everyone, and all the girls were getting introduced from Eclipse.
So fashionable.
And I was like, amazing, amazing, amazing.
Absolutely.
And I looked at my own outfit, I was like, damn it. Gotta change.
When you're nominated next
year. Next year when I'm nominated for my Tony Award, I'll make sure to get a stylist.
So it is. It's really the one. There's like opening and then there's like, you know, the Tony Awards. And that's really, you know, when most theater people like bring like everything out. And it's that full on, you know, marketing spectrum of, you know, appearances and, you know, social media blitzes and advertising. And that's what you're seeing. And so it's kind of it's all of those things working together.
And something we did with Eclipse was we came up, obviously, with a full rollout of a Tony campaign, but a big part of our campaign was video content. And so we looked at what are the really unique and special things about Eclipsed and about what Eclipsed is doing on Broadway and for Broadway, and how do we capture that in video so that we can be promoting that via social media and Facebook ads and things like that, but also have content to send via email to the Tony voters about things that they might not already know. So for Eclipsed, we have this amazing campaign going called 10,000 Girls, where corporations and individuals can sponsor underprivileged girls who would ordinarily never get to see a Broadway show and have never seen a Broadway show to come and see the show. And then we offer talkbacks, and they get to meet the cast, and they get to meet the playwright and the director. And so we created a video about that.
And then also created like other things which are like really specific about the craftsmanship of the writing or of the performance. So we did a dialogue, I guess, like an interview with the dialect coach, and then some of the actresses, where they were really just talking about, you know, what it means to step into a completely different way of talking and the authenticity of that, and what it meant for Denai to write in that language, you know, and all the conscious choices of that. And so it's just fascinating to really bring out all of these elements.
Dissect the show even more.
Yeah, yeah.
And the uniqueness too, because I think it really is there, you know, there, especially this season, and I feel like we say that every year, but especially this season, it just happens to be an incredibly strong season and very, very diverse.
Very unique. Really just absolute, one of the most exciting seasons ever.
I think so too. And so to be able to hone in on the uniqueness and this, the strengths of a particular show that no other show has, is, I think, really important. And it's and it's maybe things that people aren't aware of, and so we're just looking at how do we shine the light on those things.
How did the Pico Group come into existence?
So Amanda was an owner of another agency previously, which is a digital agency called Art Meets Commerce, and she had really great, she had, you know, and it was really, I mean, that was, and there was a lot of stuff that happened before that, obviously, but, you know, she was in a situation where she was not you know, she was a owner of an agency.
It was not the only
not owner. The owner of her agency. And you know, she was, you know, working with that group and of you know, people, and she found it to be frustrating. You know, she found that the creative process in a group to be frustrating. And I would say about, you know, 9 months into it, I was, you know, tired of hearing how frustrating it was. And I said, so Amanda, why don't you just change your point of view or start your own agency? And
and I thought it would be easier to start my own agency than to change my mind.
So that's what happened.
That's what I did.
So one day, you know.
And that was a little over 7 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, the Pico group started really, really small. It was me and one other full-time person, and then we had a part-time designer and like 3 or 4 interns. And we were sharing space with a friend of mine who has a publicity firm. We were in 1501 Broadway, the Paramount building. I wanted a really cool, fancy address. And you know, me and my staff shared a round, small glass table and brought our own laptops in. And I sprung for a $99 printer.
And passed around the USB cord
to each other around the table as we needed to print things for meetings or for proofs of ads and things. So that was, I look back with real fondness because things were so much easier then with a tiny team, and there wasn't so much, you know, digital expression then. And, you know, just having a bunch of interns around to do every little thing you needed them to do, you know.
Was social media a thing that existed when you started your marketing career?
It was, but not obviously the way it is now. So, yeah, Facebook existed. MySpace existed.
MySpace, yeah.
We did create Facebook pages for shows, and we maintained them, but it wasn't nearly, you know, I don't even think that the advertising platform was built yet. So it was really just organic, and getting our friends and the cast's friends and to like the pages and comment on things.
Organic is even like a glorified word.
Like organically reach this many people, but boost your post for $5. You can organically reach more.
It's true. But, you know, back in the day, it was literally like creating the page. Like social media marketing was like, we will create
a Facebook page
for you. Then, you know what I mean?
Remind you to ask your friends to like it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and you post on it. And you'd like, you know, and then there's, I guess, which, you know, we still utilize, you know, a little bit, but like nowhere near what it was. But there was a, you know, the strategy for gaining followers was, you know, liking and unliking, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was sort of like, you know, I mean, we still do that with Pepito's account on Instagram.
Your dog.
Yeah.
Pepito.
Yeah.
The best chihuahua in the world.
Plug it. What's the at?
It's at Pepito Chihuahua.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has over 1,400 followers now.
Yeah, we don't work too hard at it.
What was the first show that the Pico Group did marketing for?
Rock of Ages.
Well, we started the agency with 4 clients. So Rock of Ages at the time was in transition, transferring from off-Broadway at New World Stages to Broadway at the Brooks Atkinson. And so we were handling the marketing for the Broadway transfer. So we had that, and then we had 3 off-Broadway shows. Blood Type Ragu was over at the Actors Theater on 7th Avenue South. And then...
It's not there anymore, is it?
It's not there anymore. And the theater isn't there anymore.
The show.
That was like... Blood Type Ragu.
And we worked on a show... We also worked on a show called Beowulf.
Which is really cool. It was a Dave Malloy piece.
And Dave Malloy obviously wrote Natasha Pierre and the
Great
Comet,
yeah,
and Preludes, and
this was
a whole
with
bunch of
shotgun
players from
San Francisco, which was really, really cool. So it was like his sort of epic storytelling of the Beowulf,
really great
tale.
Yeah, so we started with 4 projects and just, you know, kind of like rolled out and built from there.
And then you guys got married how many years ago?
A little over 5 years ago.
Yeah, I was reading an article in the vow section of the New York Times. Yeah. And first of all, the picture is amazing because it's like Amanda and Chris like at their, I don't know, getting married. And then there's jugglers on either side. But it was like telling your story. I was like, Amanda and Chris broke up.
Mike Richter and Joel Jeske.
Oh, it was Joel? Oh, because their faces are like.
Jugglers.
Not just jugglers.
Sorry, Joel. I don't know. They're amazing performers who happen to be club juggling. But it's a really amazing article. Because the whole time I was like, oh my God, this sounds just like Amanda. It was like Amanda was pressuring Chris. And then they broke up for a year. And then Chris was like, what am I doing? I'm getting back together with Amanda. And then you got married.
Yeah.
That's pretty much sums up your relationship,
right? I guess
so. But you met at college.
Yeah.
We met in college. Yeah.
Were you both trying to be actors when you met?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the first time we met, which Chris doesn't remember, was a year before we actually met. And we were in the green room of the theater department at Brooklyn College. And I was in a band. I was a lead singer in a band.
What was the band called?
Oh, we had lots of different names.
What was the best one?
I think Tribal Sun was my favorite.
Was it S-O-N or S-U-N?
S-U-N.
Oh.
Like literally the sun.
And so my rhythm guitarist dropped out of our band, and we had
rhythm falls out.
It's over.
We had some gigs coming up, and Chris walked in, and he had long hair and was wearing a motorcycle jacket and Levi's jeans. And I said, "Oh, do you know any guitarists? Because I have some gigs coming up with my band, and someone just dropped out." And he was like, "No, I don't." And I was like, "Really? Really, you don't?" Because I thought he was a guitarist because he looked like the people that I played with and that I gigged with. And he was like, no, sorry, man, and walked out. And I didn't see him again for a year until we had orientation and in the theater program. And he stood up and made a speech about how he was going to bring back the undergraduate theater organization that had laid dormant for a decade and all of his amazing, very passionate plans on how to you know, reunite the students in the department. And I had like a mini panic attack and walked out of the room with a girlfriend of mine named Anna and said, I'm gonna marry that person. And Anna said, okay, what's his name? And I said, I don't know his name, but a name is unimportant. And that is the man I'm going to marry. And then she did. And then I chased him around for a few years before he decided to go on a date with me.
So similar to our story, and I'm not being ironic at all. I literally met him, and that weekend I met him at orientation at Columbia. I was like, I'm going to marry him. And I was like, if I tell anyone that, they'll be like, you're a crazy lady. And then I am marrying him. Amanda, we're just like the same person. We just know.
Yeah. We are
deep,
sisters.
Man. So deep.
Yep.
So amazing. So were you like, whoa, this girl is really coming on strong?
Yeah, definitely.
But you were there for theater too?
Yeah.
We were both acting majors.
Yeah.
Acting.
Yeah, but you guys are special because you're also sort of in the circus world. So when do you start entering that?
Yeah, so I went to, when I was in high school, I decided I wanted to be a clown. And so I found this really craptastic.
So we got to ask though, what did you see that made you want to be a clown? What was the thing?
I always have a really hard time remembering why I wanted to be a clown. When I was a kid, I always wanted to be a clown. I just
really
always
had
did.
It from
like,
when you were little.
When I was a little kid, I was just like, I want to be a clown. It was like, I want to make people laugh. I want to be a clown. It wasn't like, oh, I want to do funny things or be a comedian. Or it was just like, I want to be a clown. I don't know why. I don't have any significant clown memories, you know, really. I mean, I grew up in Wisconsin, you know, so there's like in Milwaukee, so there's a lot of clown.
So did you go
culture,
to the circus museum,
you know,
in Baraboo?
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, but I don't. But there's no like moment where I was like, no, you know what I mean? But yeah, so I always knew that I wanted to do it. And when I was in high school, I just decided, all right, well, I'm going to be, you know, I was like literally, look, like, I need a summer job. What would be fun to do? I'm like, well, I'll be a clown, you know? Like, So what in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I don't know what.
What did you do, like, go to parties?
So what I did was I found a craptastic clown school that was like a week long that like literally taught me how to, you know, twist balloons and wear makeup. And I did that and I was like, oh my God, you know, like it was like one of those moments where you like open up like a, you know, piece of crap, but you find like this brilliant thing inside, you know what I mean? Yes. And you're just like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it actually ended up being totally valuable because then I was able to move to New York City and have a skill that was worth $400 an hour, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so it was just kind of like, oh great. It really made my life possible, you know what I mean? It was, and so I am certainly like beyond grateful for that week in Georgia. You know?
So did you move to New York to do school or did you move to New York?
After high school, I went to the Del Arte School in California.
Okay, that's
what and from there, all of my friends from high school had moved here. Some of them were in school and some of them weren't. They were, you know, some of them were just doing theater and stuff like that. And so I said, all right, great, I'll come over and do that. And I actually got here and was like an after the Del Arte experience. And then coming here, I just was so displaced and like depressed. I was like, fuck it. I'm going to go to school, give myself some structure. And, you know what I mean? Like I need to work my way through this sort of like, you know, whoa, like just too much kind of a feeling. And I guess I was meant to end up meeting Amanda through that. I think that was sort of the payoff.
Was your introduction to circus through Chris, or did you find it your own way?
No, yes and no. So Chris was gigging and performing, and also going into hospitals to work, you know, in the pediatrics. And so he would show up to college, to classes in, you know, suspenders and black pants and clown shoes, rolling a wheelie suitcase or a vintage, you know, looking kind of silly suitcase with all his stuff in it. And I thought that was adorable. So that was sort of the first seed. But then I worked at
Amanda started marketing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went back to get my my master's degree in arts management. And I wound up getting a job working at a marketing company, which was called HHC Marketing. And it's not around anymore, but it was huge. There were two marketing companies for Broadway, and it was one of the two. And so I worked on lots of shows, and one of the shows that I worked on was Slava Snow Show.
Well, she had a whole run, actually. I mean, you had the Moscow Cats Theater, which is, you know,
right,
Oleg.
Right.
What was that, right? I can't remember their name, but it's basically a trained cat show.
Like circus, with, you know, with clowns.
And their clowns. Then there was
Which did really well.
Then there was Slava Snow Show. And then
what was seeing Slava like the first time you saw that?
Oh, like absolutely mind-blowing.
It's a really amazing show, isn't it?
Absolutely so mind-blowing. Great. It was so incredible and so completely different from anything I had ever seen. And that was really...
Could you describe it a little bit for somebody who hasn't seen it?
Yeah. So Slava's Snow Show is... So Slava is a Russian clown and has worked with Cirque du Soleil.
He's the Russian clown. You know, like he is like when that show was running, people would, you know, from, I guess, around the country, but certainly from New York, all the Russians would come. Like, this was like, it was like, I don't know what the equivalent would be, you know what I mean? But it's like, you know, it's like, we must go. Like, I want my children to experience
this craft.
man's presence, yeah. You know what I mean?
And so Slava Snow Show was a very artful,
poetic
portrayal of the clown experience. And so I see that and I'm working on it.
And the producers of that,
one of the producers of that starts Spiegel Tent, which was, you know, a super sexy circus, sort of like Cirque du Soleil, but way more intimate down at the South Street Seaport at Pier 17. And they asked me to come in house and be their VP of business development. And so I leave the marketing firm and go in-house, and that was really just like absolutely incredible. We did a deal with a restaurateur, and we had a pop-up restaurant on the premises. We started DJ dance parties. We created a speakeasy.
you created like just amazing deals with, you know, Boucheron and like,
yeah, Boucheron, American Express, yeah, Zipcar, like Dahon Bikes. Yeah. You know,
Is this the same time you're also doing Downtown Clown?
Yeah, actually, we are doing that because that I think was part of a really, that was totally part of when we were doing that. Yeah, yeah.
So Chris started New York Downtown Clown Review, and
the genesis of that was really, really simple. I was invited somehow to a fundraiser for a Clowns Without Borders thing by Devin Sisler, I think, and I'm not sure who she was working with at the time. But anyway, so I go and do it, and it was basically just like a, you know, clown variety show at the Bowery Poetry Club. And I was like, this is like amazing. Why isn't this happen? You know what I mean? I asked kind of around, I'm like, why, you know, aren't people, you know, is this happening anywhere?
Right.
And they were like, well, you know, some people do, some people, you know, whatever. And I was like, well, like, I can do that. You know what I mean? Like, that's like literally like $500 a month. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, let's do this. And so that was essentially the beginning of that. And like literally a month and a half later, we had the first, you know, Downtown Clown variety show.
Where did you do it the first time?
It was at a tiny basement space theater called Under St. Mark's.
Oh.
And we were there for...
It
was just so much fun. We were there for a year. Within 2 or 3 months, those 80 seats were, you know, sold out in advance.
And we had to turn people away.
You know, like the...
That was a great feeling.
Yeah, there's so many rumors, you know. There's rumors of that, you know, Avner was turned away. You know what I mean? I never saw, like, any of those things.
I ran box office, and I will be honest, I didn't know who anyone was at the time.
Like,
so that could have happened.
There's all these, like, in the beginning, there was so funny. There were all these rumors that, like, these big-time clowns were all turned away at the door.
Sorry, I don't know.
Because we didn't have enough seats.
There were continued to be rumors about the show, which I always thought were really funny.
First time I saw it, I saw Barry Lubin and Dick Monday. Did they do an act together? Is that right?
They probably did.
Right. Barry Lubin is sitting on his lap as a puppet. And
I
was like, oh my God, I've never seen this dude not do Grandma.
Yeah.
And it was so funny.
Yeah. But at that point, we were at... the show ran. We did it for five or six years. I don't remember exactly.
Like 6 years, I think.
And we did it for the first 4 years, we did it every month. And then the last 2 years, we took the summers off.
I think so, yeah.
I think is what we did.
Would you ever reinvigorate Downtown
Clown? Yeah, maybe.
Clown?
I mean, it was so much fun, you know. And part of it was we did the Golden Nose Awards, which was just so where we would, you know.
I heard about those awards before I knew what anything was. Josh was like, was it Spencer?
Spencer.
It was like, Spencer Novick won a Golden Nose Award.
Big deal.
And I was like, what
he
is
did?
A
Golden Nose Award? He won? Oh my God, I don't even remember.
I was like, I have no idea what that is.
It was a big deal. I mean, like, because, you know, everyone...
It's like voted on, right?
Yeah,
they voted on it by the
community. It was really, I mean, you know, the Clown Review was not about the content. You know what I mean? Like the content was great and it was awful. You know what I mean? But that was part of the experience. And that was really intentional. I didn't want to curate it. I didn't want, you know, curate it in a way that was based on what I thought was good. I didn't want to curate it based on what I thought was, you know, true clowning or whatever. It was a total mix of whatever, you know, it was totally free. The curation happened when I was like, well, we can't have five, there was always only five acts. Well, sometimes there were more, but I tried to keep it five. But it was like, I can't have five circus clowns all in one night. Or I can't have five Sue Morrison clowns in one night. You know what I mean? I can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, so the only curation was to try to mix it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you'd have a variety of stuff. But the whole goal of it really was about inviting the community. It was all about building the community. You know, so even the awards was not, you know, an opportunity for, you know, someone to say, this is what it was.
Right,
really,
like Chris Lewick is giving you an award.
Yeah, it was an effort to find out what the community valued and what the community didn't value. And, you know, that was really the impulse behind it.
So why did you guys go down the route of then sort of going back to or staying with marketing rather than going down the producing route?
Wow, I don't know. What do you think, Amanda?
I really enjoy marketing. I think more than anything else I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And I get really, really excited about working on a project that I love and figuring out how to connect that project with the audience that will love it too.
Yeah.
And I think as a producer, you do that, but you also need other people to handle your marketing because you're busy producing. And I enjoy the marketing part of it a lot. And I also enjoy working on multiple projects at a time. And when producing, you know, typically you tend to focus on one as your main thing. I like to kind of have lots of stuff going on at once, which keeps me from getting bored.
Well, you guys have been working together then for a while as a couple and a partnership.
We've always worked together. I mean, like, we always have. Like, you know, even, like, back in school, you know, that Amanda told that story about the undergraduate theater organization. And, you know, we, you know, worked together on that. And afterwards, you know, we produced shows in the Fringe Festival. And I think we also pretty much always included one another in whatever it was that we were doing.
Yeah, I mean, even with the New York Downtown Clown Review, like, Ross Mollison and David Foster and Vallejo Gantner were, like, so supportive and would say, we'd love to have our clowns perform on your stage. We'd love to give you tickets for our shows for the clown community to win as part of your game. We did a games section in every show.
Yeah.
And so it really, even when I was doing marketing for Slava Snow Show or a part of Spiegel World, Chris was very much a part of those experiences as well.
Yeah.
But Chris, Chris essentially was a creative consultant for the Pico Group from the moment I started the company.
He's like, why you started it? Start your own.
He's the reason why I started the company.
It's all my fault.
He was a creative consultant, and so when we would be looking to pitch a client really big creative ideas or a new creative campaign, Chris was the person that we would go to lay out those, to come up with the ideas and lay it out. And sometimes he would even come in and help present it to the client if I felt like I didn't have the tools or the language to do that. And then he also directed some TV commercial shoots that we did for shows as well. And I had been asking him to become more a part of the Pico Group than just a consultant, because he was, you know, he was performing and he also had a clown company where he would, you know, book out other performers on gigs and festivals and parties and stuff. And I really wanted him to be more involved in the Pico Group and our clients because he's so creative and he really brings a totally different point of view to the creative work than people just in theater do, because he's had such varied experiences and produced and all of these things. And so we were at a business conference together.
So I don't even know when this was, but I started to get, this is probably at the time when I was like, I don't think I want to do the clown review anymore. You know, I started getting like frustrated. And so I started exploring other things. And so I did, I went back to school and I got my master's in theater education. And I was like, oh, that's not what I want to do. And
after you did the whole program.
Yeah, exactly. There's this really great quote about, like, they talk about Wagner. Like, someone said this about Wagner. They were like, you know, everyone thought Wagner was like this brilliant new sun, new dawning, a sunrise of opera, when really it was a sunset. So my master's degree was meant to be this dawning of a new career, but actually it's a sunset, just went right there. And then I started, you know, really kind of being like, all right, great, well, I want to, you know, be more entrepreneurial. And so I started doing the you know, like the booking stuff, and I created a couple of clown products, which I sold online, and
which were awesome.
Yeah.
What kind of clown?
Yeah, what?
I have a there's a slapstick DVD out there of me and some students teaching slapstick, which was a system that Joel Jeske and I developed through the Slapstick Dojo. It's based on like martial arts techniques and stuff, which is really fun.
And it's sold.
And you can like buy it. You can buy it in any magic shops across the country.
Yeah. Oh my god! I need to add this to my bookshelf. Well, I mean my DVD shelf that I have like five of.
It's really comical. God. I mean, it's like the production is, you know, its value is so.
Well, you're like, okay, now make sure your hand is right here.
Yeah, exactly.
So you don't hit the person's face.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's exactly.
Oh my god! I need to see this video.
It's pretty ridiculous.
And then you did.
Then we did a series of interviews with. You know, famous clowns. The first theme of it was called the Clown Summit. The first theme was, what does it mean to be an American clown? And so we interviewed Barry Lubin, Michael Christensen, David Silly Billy, Avner, and I think there's two more, but I can't remember what's his name. Ambrose, but you know, Ambrose could play any of the roles that he, you know, he was a juggler. Gilkey. Yeah, Gilkey. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Thank you. And
So what was the answer? What does make an American circus?
Yeah, movie? That's a really, you know.
You have to listen to his show to find out. You have to listen.
Can you talk a little bit about, because I think performers who are listening to this might be interested, what it was like mentally for you to go through the process of transitioning away from a performing career to one that is still in show business but is more running a business?
That's really interesting. I mean, I think one of the things that is really evident just from my experience especially in what we're talking about, is really an evolutionary process, you know? And I think it's being honest with yourself about the things that you really want and the things that you really want to do, you know, and the things that you, the way that, the lifestyle that you want to live, you know? I mean, I got out of, when we got out of school, my first gig was an equity, you know, contract. And I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, my whole life is happening.
It's before
and I
me.
I did the you know, the tour, and I came back and I was like, great, I'm gonna go online and find out what other equity, you know, what the other equity contracts are. And literally I'm like, $400 a week? You know, my agent's gonna get, you know, 30% of that. Taxes are gonna be the other 30%. I can't live on $200 a week. I'm not willing to do that with my life. You know what I mean? Like, it was just, and it was an honest, like, just moment where I was like, I'm not going to even live through, you know, a month of that. You know what I mean? So I was like, great, that's gone. So I started doing commercials, and that was really fun and really exciting. You make more than $200 a week, you know what I mean? Yeah. But then, you know, I was standing up Amanda for, you know, because, you know, commercials, the nature of the gig is like, all right, you know, your agent calls you. I'm sorry, everyone, you can't see all of the miming that I'm doing.
There's
here.
A lot of
that
hand
fulfills
gestures.
The elements of the story. So anyway, your agent calls you and is like, "Hey, you know, have an audition for you at 3:00. The callback is tomorrow, and it shoots on Thursday. Go!" And you know what I mean. And then it's like you literally can't have any life plans, you know what I mean? Like, you just can't. And at that time, I was also doing, you know, the clowning and developing some things that I thought were important, and our relationship was developing and all these things. And it was like, you know, that was not more valuable.
Your priorities changed.
You know what I mean? And I think that goes all the way through to, you know, certainly with, you know, our relationship, you know, when you're really asking yourself the bigger questions of what do I want my life to be? What do I want to achieve? What are some of the things that I want to do? And I think if you go through that process, I think you discover sort of what's possible and, you know, what you need to let go of. And we're talking about it just in context of being a performer versus being, you know, an entrepreneur or whatever, but it's true just in terms of like a relationship. It's true in terms of, you know, habits and, you know, just living space, you know what I mean? And so I think it's just sort of accepting that more of a fluid lifestyle.
I think maybe it was in the Playbill thing that you guys were just interviewed in for. You said something like, or the lady was like, how do you guys stay together through all of this? And you said something like, you know, the people we were when we first met are not who we are now, and you have to be willing to change with that person. And it seems like both of you have changed dramatically, but like also changed together.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We work really hard at it. I mean, well, not really hard at it, but we have some rituals in place that help us grow together.
What rituals? You know? Can you share any of your rituals?
Well, we kiss 20 times a day.
Yeah, No, we should do that. That's a really good... That might help us a lot.
Okay, we're only at 17. I'm a man.
Have a chart. The main one that I think helps us grow together, you know, as well as apart, is Every Sunday, we sit down and we do a gratitude list together where we fill in a notebook of, you know, we just like literally go through, you know, things that we're individually grateful for, and things that, you know, happened that week that were really amazing and, you know, and were just exciting. And we sort of just have, it's just kind of an open flow reflection, you know, individually, but as well as together. And so I think that lets us see each other's process very clearly, and respect it, you know, rather than being like, how come, you know, she's so whatever now, you know what I mean?
It's kind of nice, because if you work together too, like, at the end of the day, you can kind of forget all the positive things that happened and bogged down in the negatives.
Yeah,
and
man.
And because things are moving so quickly, a lot of times we don't even remember what happened that week, and going through that process actually sparks that that memory and allows us to reflect. Mm-hmm. And I think as artists and as entrepreneurs, there's a lot of similarities between those two tracks, because the personalities are really similar, and artists and entrepreneurs tend to just look forward and look to the next thing and keep going, and they don't really allow themselves, or we don't allow ourselves, to
honor the process
and see what we're doing and be proud of what has happened, even if it was something negative. Proud that we learned that lesson and that we could move forward in a new way. And so the weekly sit down that we do is really, I think, important.
Would you give any advice to people who have particularly small circus shows or small theater shows that wouldn't hire or aren't at the point of hiring a marketing company to think about selling tickets? Like, if you have one or two things you would say, think about these things before you put tickets on sale, or when you put tickets on sale.
I mean, I think the number one, well, I think the most, so what I think one of the most important marketing tools of this time and probably going into the future is, and it's something that I discovered with my small businesses and something that we try to bring to our clients, although bigger shows aren't really bigger projects aren't necessarily interested in this conversation. You'll see bigger brands starting this conversation. But what I'm talking about is where you as the organization or you as the company are building a community of people around yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you really are building a group of people that what you do speaks directly to them. You know what I mean? So you're seeing like huge brands start to do that, you know, now more than ever. You know, but that is like the most important thing that can happen. If you can cultivate a group of people that you establish, a path of communication to, an open dialogue, you know, that you need that thing first. Like, that's the most important marketing piece that you can have, is building that community and making and finding out what they want, with the perfect thing that they want, and how you can provide it. I'm just going to go back to the Clown Review, because I felt it did it so well. It was like, I thought about it very pragmatically. It was like this great kind of like creative inspiration. But then it was like, all right, great. I'm going to get a theater. When I thought about moving to the Crane, which was 100 seats, you know, it was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? You know, 99 seat theater, you know, how am I going to fill this? I just sort of thought like, okay, so I'm going to do 12 shows. That's like, okay, it's, you know, 1,200 tickets I have to sell. Well, who's an ideal customer for the Clown Review? Well, it's someone who would come about 3 times. Well, that means I only need 400 people. I need 400 ideal clients, you know, ideal customers, and I'll be sold out every month. And it was like, well, then how do I create the show that is perfect for those 400 people? Mm-hmm. What would bring them in? What would make them excited? Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, by, you know, so it was really this very organic process of, who am I talking to and what do they want and what do I want to create and how are we in this all together? Mm-hmm. So I think that, I mean, if you're talking about like you have $0, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to spend like mm-hmm. any money on like the outward advertising or whatever, you know what I mean? Like that to me is the number one thing that you should be thinking about is, you know, what is that core group of people that you can invite into your world? And what's that synergy between them? Because then, you know, like what happened with the Clown Review was then there were moments when that community was really leveraged. Like we were, you know, got a couple of really big press moments, and those moments, like, you know, people, you know, flooded in, you know, from like, you know, outsiders, you know what I mean? And it was kind of like, wow. And it was like, something's happening there, you know? So I think that the more that you can create that energy and that experience, and technology right now is something that allows that, you know, I think it's such a unique, so I mean, like, this podcast is a great example of that. You know, a blog is a great example of that. Newsletters are great examples of that. You know, social media, video, all of these types of marketing that were, you know, very difficult to do, or even more difficult to do 5 years ago, like really accessible and simple right now.
I think to piggyback on that, you know, looking at who the audience is that's going to come, because if there's a small circus that's selling tickets for $70, that's a different audience that you're trying to attract than if you're selling tickets for $15 or $20. And I think being realistic about what you need to make your project work and be successful, whatever your goals are, if it's financial success, then pricing it accordingly for who actually is going to come to your show. And if you're reaching for a different audience, then making sure you have money and you have staffing, even if they're interns or they're you, in place to actually get the message out to those people. And so, you know, some ways to go kind of more grassroots for a smaller circus would be reaching out to other circus organizations and circuses and doing a quid pro quo. So they have social media, you have social media, asking them to promote you and you'll promote them. You have a small news, you know, a list of email addresses, and you can send something out for them, and they have the same and can send something out for you. You mm-hmm. can have flyers at your venue and they can have flyers at their venue and those sort of things. So you start cross-pollinating within the same sort of audience base as well.
I would add to that by saying, you want to do that before you need something from anyone else. Because if you're the person that's like, hey, I have this little community of people, I'd love to promote, you know, your shit to mm-hmm. my people, then you're not a sleazy marketer, you're a connector.
So we like to sort of wrap up our podcast talking about if you have any book, TV show, or book, TV show / movie. So like something on video and a show you would recommend. So live video reading.
So let's start with book. So you know what the DVD is. It's Chris's Slapstick
Dojo.
I feel like you warned us about this, and it totally didn't do the homework.
Oh, it's all right.
What are the questions? We go, well, we just wing it, except for these three questions.
Except for this. We're like, oh, man. All right,
well, good. You fail.
Yeah, yeah. Live show. No, what are we talking about?
Like TV or movie.
Right, what are we talking about first? See. Which one is it?
Let's do book first. Book.
Well, I think a book that I think both of us love is called Walking Through Walls.
Okay.
Mm.
That's what a great one.
It doesn't have to have anything to do with the arts, by the way.
It doesn't have anything. Well, no, it doesn't have anything.
What is Walking Through Walls?
Walking Through Walls is a biography sort of presented in more of a, it's presented as a, right, just full-on biography,
yeah,
right? Basically of this guy who was a interior designer in Miami,
mm-hmm.
But he learned how to channel.
And heal people
with, you know, energy.
Energy.
And it's his son writing his story.
Anyway. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty. All right. That's a really cool book.
That sounds good.
I'll probably read that. I'm currently reading RuPaul's Working It book, so I might change.
What is another really great?
What about a live show or a movie or a video? Anything you've seen recently, there's other than the ones stuff. You rep?
I mean, The Color Purple.
Mm. Oh my God, Cynthia, how do you say her last name?
Erivo.
She's gonna win.
I hope so, because she's just beyond committed and talented.
I've never
I was literally a puddle,
right?
Weeping through the show. I think it's a spectacular production.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend that.
Yeah.
Great, and then we'll say the Slapstick Dojo as your way to go dig that up.
So much better than that.
But the ultimate question,
I would say Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
Man, okay, are you guys caught up? We're not going to do spoilers.
I'm not caught up.
You're not. Chris isn't caught up.
Okay, I won't spoil it. But Vox, do you know the website Vox? It's like a news source run by Ezra Klein. But they just put up this video today talking about if time travel exists in Game of Thrones, and if it does, how it would exist. So I'll send you the link. We'll put it
in the show. I got most of it. Some of it went over my head.
Oh, it's so weird.
It's really cool. But I don't want to ruin anything for you. But the most important question that everyone's wondering, who do you think is going to win for best actor in a musical? Lin-Manuel Miranda or Leslie Odom Jr.? I mean, everyone else is amazing in that category, but it's probably just like between the two of them.
I did Leslie Odom.
Leslie Odom, I mean, he's just absolutely incredible. Yes.
We have a pool in the office, you know.
Who is, so. Are most people Leslie?
Did you put mine in?
Yeah, I put yours in.
Are most people Leslie?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. We don't see it.
It's anonymous.
Yeah. Yeah,
see, what Chris and Amanda do is they read everybody's, and then they use statistics to pick the best people for themselves.
We don't have to read everyone, just two or three champs in the office. Yeah. Just whatever they say.
So we do also usually end up by asking, had you not gone into marketing or circus or theater, what do you think you would have done? Is there like another career path you might have taken, another life you would have lived?
Oh, like perform, not performing.
Well,
at all.
For example, Gypsy said she'd like run an inn. You know, like if she wasn't a circus director, she'd be running like a bed and breakfast somewhere.
Probably I would either have an animal sanctuary with hundreds of animals that I would love.
God, I'll work with you on that.
Or I would have like an ashram yoga and meditation like retreat place with like raw food and juices and stuff like that.
Awesome. What about you, Chris?
And I might still do both of those things in one day.
I don't think this is a what, you know, what would you do? I think this is what's next.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean? Chris's face when you were saying all this was like, okay, great. I have a plan for how those will happen.
But this wasn't an option, I think, when I was a kid. But like now, I would totally be involved in the medical marijuana industry.
Oh, me too. I would have gotten
that. I mean, like,
that
would be 100%. Like, I mean, I would be I don't know what element of that, but I would, I mean, that's going to be huge business, man.
Yeah. Like, it already is.
Yeah, it already is.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you. Give Pepito our love.
Of course.
We will.
Well, that's our show, folks.
We hope you enjoyed our interview with Chris Lewick and Amanda Pico. It was awesome having them over, talking all about marketing and circus and their lives.
I basically could talk to Amanda and Chris for days on end because I always forget that Chris was a clown and he makes me laugh so much. And then I'm like, man, you're so funny. And then I'm like, oh, right, he was a clown. And then their dynamic is just so cute. I love it. I love it. I love talking to them. And they really have an interesting view because not very many people are as into the theatrical world as they are into the circus world. And so it's great that we can have all these different conversations about theater and circus.
If you're enjoying the show, please share it with your friends on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram, or email. You can also email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com. Have a great week.
And hopefully, you know, all of our predictions are correct for the Tony Awards.
Fingers crossed.
James Corden.